Well, it's that time again, and the doctor is in. Yeah, I'm glad you could join us for another Dr. Bill, the Computer Curmudgeon Podcast. Podcasting almost live for your enjoyment and education. Because we're trying to spread the word of safe computing, which is basically don't use Microsoft unless you can really help it. Well, you know how it is. Sometimes you just got to tell it like it is, and that's what the doctor is all about. So, again, glad you could join us this week. We've got a lot of things to cover, lots of different, unique, strange things to cover as usual. And we'll just start off with some of the things that turned up in my blog this past week. The first one is right at the top as I read it, which is actually, and I apologize for this, late again. Here it is, Sunday evening, and I'm just getting the podcast done, but it's just been a really busy weekend. My son had a debate tournament down in Charlotte that we had to go to, and it was a lot of fun. It was very cool to see a lot of young people training their minds for greater things than just video games. Although if you talk to Ben, my son, the game master, he would tell you that he was training his mind to do video games by debating. So, hey, what are you going to do? But anyway, I want to talk to you a little bit about the first topic as I start this evening, which is in my blog, No, Linux Really Is More Secure Than Windows. I thought this was a really good little article. I'm not talking about my article in the blog. I'm talking about the article that I reference on the web. Because, you know, a lot of people have been making a big deal about the Linux worm that has come out. And there are a lot of people say, see, it's Linux's turn. You know, look, everybody's been attacking Windows for all these years because that's been the predominant operating system. Now that Linux is getting more desktop resources, if you will, more and more people using it for their desktop, then we're going to start seeing more Linux worms and viruses and so forth, and it's going to be just as bad as Windows. Well, no, not really. Because, you see, even though Linux is beginning to get more popular, we're still talking about a very small percentage to start with compared to Windows. Windows still has 90-some percent of the desktops in the world. But even so, let's say Linux even achieved parity, you know, which... Oh, that would be great. That would just be lovely. But let's say that it did achieve 50%, Windows still had 50%, and there was an even spread of people trying to write viruses. Linux is still more secure by virtue of the way it is written. And this particular article that I reference is by Stephen J. Vaughn Nichols. He wrote it November, or at least released it November 9th in the eWeek newsletter or magazine, or really it started out as a newspaper for the electronic industry, and it's now, as most magazines have gone, they've gone the direction of going to the web. He has a really neat article about Linux as opposed to Windows and how it is just more secure, and it's just because it was written from the ground up to be a multi-user, I've said this before, a multi-user networked operating system. And of course today, as he says, Windows shows its creaky history as the descendant of a single-user standalone PC operating system. It gives Windows some strengths that Linux systems don't have. For instance, you can easily copy and paste from almost any Windows application to another. And with some Linux applications, it's easy to cut and paste. Others, it's not. And that's because of ownership. File ownership means something in Linux. If one user creates a file and the other user doesn't have access by being in, let's say, the same user group as the other user, they can't get to that file. You know, there's just no way because they don't have rights to it. With Windows, if you logged on as Fred and then somebody else logged on as George, if they were both logged into Windows, they could access each other's files if they knew where to find them on the system. You know, and I'm talking about a typical Windows desktop as it was originally conceived. Now, I know that it is improved since they went to the NT kernel. It is improved since they have gone to Windows XP. Definitely, okay? I do not argue that at all. I'm talking about its history, its heritage. Windows was designed to be a single-user operating system, so they didn't give a thought to the security aspects of the system. And that's the reason that it has a lot of the flaws that it does. They just didn't think of it in those terms. Okay? So, just by virtue of the way Linux is designed, it's going to be safer. Now, he brings up a good point, and that is that Linux is, and the title of his article is, Linux is secure as you want it to be. You can lock Linux down. Matter of fact, there is a variant, if you will, of Linux, SE Linux, which is designed to be secure, and it is extremely locked down. You can also unlock Linux by choice and make it, if you will, almost as vulnerable as Windows. And I kind of hate to use this example, but Linspire is a good example of that. That's where the people at Linspire have made a decision on purpose. They have decided to make Linux more like Windows, and in order to make Linux more like Windows and operate more like Windows, they have designed it like Windows to be a little more open in the way it works. And literally, if you take it to the full extreme, by default on Linspire, you log on as root and you use root as the main account, which is the administrative account. It has full access to the whole system. Just like in Windows, by default, when you come into Windows, if you don't create a special separate account with less privileges, even in XP today, you're going to come in by default with administrative privileges, which means you could say delete Startup Star and blow away your entire hard drive. Well, the same thing is true with Linspire, because by default, they make it more like Windows, and it is more open, quote-unquote, in the sense of security. Now, you can very easily in Linspire create a user account that doesn't have privileges, because that's really the that's the way Linux really works, and so it's easy to do that. But you have to do that by decision. And in the, by the same token, with XP, Windows XP, you could create a user account with less privileges on purpose and be more secure. And as a matter of fact, a lot of people recommend if you're going to be, you know, surfing the web just willy-nilly going wherever you want to go, and you're going to be playing games maybe that you've downloaded, it might be wise to create a, quote, gaming account or a surfing account that has less privileges so that if you do click on something, you know, dangerous and risky, it won't blow your system up. It won't infect it as badly as it would if you were running with full administrative privileges. Because a lot of Windows viruses, a lot of Windows adware and spyware, they assume you're going to be running with full administrative privileges. And because of that, they can get in and do things that you really don't want them doing. So going in with a non-privileged account is a very good way of protecting yourself at that level. Okay, so just a few things to think about. You know, it's like on the, what was the show? Oh man, it's been so many years now. There was a late night TV show, and he would kind of tap his head and say things to make you go hmm. Things to make you go hmm. Just think about it. Okay, maybe make yourself a little bit more secure. All right, next little entry that I had here in the blog that I found very interesting doesn't have to do with computing, but that's all right. I'm also into science and things of that nature, so we have that as well. And this one is about a new power source that defies physics. It's a very interesting and weird article. A scientist has discovered or developed, or however you want to look at it, a new power source that simply shouldn't work according to known physical laws, insofar as current scientific understanding says anyway. Now, that's really the point. It obviously is obeying physical laws. We just don't fully understand all the physical laws. So, it's a renewable energy source that turns physics basically on its head, just turns everything upside down, because it produces 1,000 times more heat than conventional fuel. And, you know, the article says independent scientists claim to have viewed the experiments that Dr. Mills says that his company, Blacklight Power, has tens of millions of dollars in investment lined up to bring the idea to market. He claims to be just months away from unveiling his creation. The problem is that according to the rules of quantum mechanics, the physics that govern the behavior of atoms, the idea is theoretically impossible. quote, physicists are quite conservative. It's not easy to convince them to change the theory that's been accepted for 50 to 60 years. I don't think Mills' theory should be supported, said Jan Nauditz, a theoretical physicist at the University of Antwerp. What has much of the physics world up in arms is Dr. Mills' claim that he has produced a new form of hydrogen, the simplest of all atoms, with just a single proton circling one electron, circled by one electron. In his hydrino, this is the new form, the electron sits a little closer to the proton than normal, and the formation of the new atoms from traditional hydrogen releases huge amounts of energy. This is scientific heresy. According to quantum mechanics, electrons can only exist in an atom in strictly defined orbits, and the shortest distance allowed between the proton and the electron in hydrogen is fixed. The two particles are simply not allowed to get any closer. Well, who says? Apparently, he has found a way to do it, and he's come up with this thing that creates additional energy that, you know, or at least is efficiently producing energy. Just to give you an example, says that in a recent economic forecast, Professor Moss, who studied this product built from Blacklight Technologies theory, calculated that a hydrino energy would cost about 1.2 cents per kilowatt hour. This compares to an average of 5 cents per kilowatt hour for coal and 6 cents per kilowatt hour for nuclear energy. And then they have a quote here from Kurt Davies, research director of Greenpeace USA, who says, well, if it's wrong, it will be proven wrong. But if it's right, it's so important that all else falls away. It has the potential to solve our dependence on oil. Our stance is cautious optimism. Well, you know, hey, I can go along with that, cautious optimism. You know, if it proves to be right, I mean, obviously, it either works or it doesn't. You know, if he's pulling a hoax or you know, the results of the tests have been skewed, it's just not going to work in real life. But if it does, it could open up a whole lot of interesting possibilities. And I tell you what, I'm looking forward to seeing where this goes. I still think there's going to be a lot more happening in the field of hydrogen and hydrogen alternative power. So keep your eye on that. That's going to be really, really interesting. All right, other things that are happening. There's been a lot of people talking about the Sony rootkit issue. And I'm not going to go into great detail. I would encourage you, if you want more information on the Sony rootkit problem, issue, however you want to look at it, listen to the Security Now podcast with Steve Gibson and Leo Laporte. They cover it in great detail. And suffice it to say that digital rights management that is in use by Sony in some of their music CDs requires you to agree to an end-user license agreement, a EULA. If you agree to that and install the player that comes with their CD, it installs a rootkit on your PC, and that rootkit is compromising, literally, your operating system. It's making it possible for anybody, including yourself, to put a file on your system, and if it's called $SYS$, it will just disappear from the operating system. No virus checker will find it. No any spyware program will find it. You won't be able to see it. You won't be able to locate it. It will be hidden effectively because the rootkit actually modifies your Windows kernel to hide that file. Now, among other things, I understand there's also a backdoor in place because of it on your system, and there's also a phoning home thing where it's actually telling Sony what's going on. And of course, Sony is saying, oh, no. You know, we don't pay any attention to any of that traffic that's coming back to us. Yeah, right. You know, that and, you know, I'll sell you a bridge. How about that? No, come on, Sony. They're beginning to backpedal really quickly because there's all of a sudden class action suits now, and the government is now, you know, getting involved, and just all kinds of crazy stuff happening because of this Sony rootkit issue. But it's pointing out some very important technical and privacy issues for computer users, mainly that nobody should have the right to install something on your system without your permission and your permission knowing what they intend to do on your system. See, if you just agree to that end user license agreement, the EULA, and you agree to it based on the idea that, oh, well, this is going to somehow enhance my system for playing this CD, which is totally wrong, and Sony in turn takes that, quote, agreement that you just gave them permission and turns around and puts something on your system that actually harms your system, then that is absolutely wrong on so many levels that it's ridiculous. So they're getting in trouble, and I'm glad they're getting in trouble because they should, to be that, I don't know, the chutzpah involved in doing what they did is just unbelievable. There have been some people that say that Sony didn't even fully understand what it was they were doing, and I can kind of understand that maybe upper management said, yeah, that sounds like a good idea, and they didn't think through the implications, but I suspect they're going to find out what the implications are because this is coming back to haunt them big time. So be watching that. There's been a lot of things talking about the Sony rootkit issue, but you know, I'm not gonna get very deep into that. But I tell you, that was just pretty amazing what they were doing with that. All right, what else is happening that I wanted to mention? Let's see. One thing that I wanted to mention was a few hints and tips. There's been a few things that have come up recently that I thought was very, very interesting, and I wanted to cover that. One is, there's a feature in Firefox that is really cool. Firefox and Google, actually, I think it's just Firefox. Let me try it, make sure I'm right. Okay, so it's not Firefox. Maybe it's Google. And that is that you can type DICT colon and then a word, and it will actually give you a dictionary definition of that word. You know, I should have tested this before the podcast because it doesn't seem to be working the way I expected it to. I'll do a little more research on this because I expected to just be able to type it in and boom, there it would be, and it's not working. So I'm missing something from this that I heard. This was something I heard on another show and thought, whoa, I've got to share that. But you know what? The doctor ought to do some research. Yeah, because when you don't do your research, you get caught like this with your figurative pants down. Now, my pants literally are not down, although if they were, you wouldn't know because it's a podcast. But they are firmly on. Don't worry about that. But this didn't work, so I'm sorry. I'll do some research and find out what it is and why it didn't work. Let's talk about something that does work. How about that? Oh, man, that was bad. But, you know, that's the thing. Sometimes when I talk about a podcast being almost live, this is what you run into. I record them as though I was doing it literally live. So there you go. The other thing I want to talk about is TrueCrypt.org. TrueCrypt.org. This is something that tomorrow I'm going to blog about as a Geek Software of the Week entry. Now, if you're not familiar with my Geek Software of the Week, let me give you a little background on that. For several years now, I have had a mailing list of friends that I share what I call my Geek Software of the Week. In other words, things that I find as I'm kind of surfing around the net and I have a need or some problem and I go find an open source product or at least free or minimal cost. My rule is really that it have minimal cost, either be free or very inexpensive. But it meets some specific need and it's something that I'm looking for. And then I'll go ahead and write up a little entry about it. And I used to just email it to all, you know, all these people. And so when I started blogging, I said, well, hey, this is perfect. I'll just put it in the blog as Geek Software of the Week, and then I'll just direct the people who I would normally email to. I'll just say, hey, go check the blog and, you know, get the Geek Software of the Week. So if you want to go to my blog, thecomputercurmudgeon.com, let me go through that, you know how to spell, curmudgeon, the computer, C-O-M-P-U-T-E-R, computer, and curmudgeon, C-U-R-M-U-D-G-E-O-N. computercurmudgeon.com. If you go to that website, which is my blog, and you go to the over on the right-hand side of the column, that you'll find the category areas, and one of them is Geek Software of the Week. Click on that, and you'll see all the geek software that I've had over past weeks. And I don't do it every week. You know, I try to do one every week, but I don't always get one. So, you know, don't hold me to the fact that it's always going to be every week. But this week, I'm going to blog on this. This is some software. It's at TrueCrypt, crypt as in encryption.org. So it's T-R-U-E, true, C-R-Y-P-T, crypt.org. It is free, open source, on-the-fly encryption. Now, you may say, why do I care? Well, here is where it can be a very good thing. Envision something with me, if you will. Let's say that you have a laptop, and this laptop is, you know, it is your repository for everything that you use in your day-to-day life. I mean, you've got your credit cards on it. You've got your most intimate information on it. You've got your documents that have all kinds of things that you wouldn't want spread around the world. And let's say you take this laptop and you have it in your car, and somehow or another somebody sees in the back seat, they break through the glass, they grab the laptop, they run off with it, they open it up, run the laptop, and what happens? They have access to all your files. Well, now there are a lot of ways you can get around that. One thing, don't leave it laying in the back seat where everybody can see it. Duh. You know, there's a lot of things you can do from a physical security standpoint. There are various locking devices that you can have. There's all kinds of, you know, biometric devices where you have to put your fingerprint on it in order for the system to boot. There's just all kinds of things. Boy, this has been a weird podcast. I've been slipping up on a lot of things. Sorry about that. Biofeedback, of course, is completely separate from what I'm talking about. Anyway, but let's say that you don't have any of those devices. How can you have a place on your hard drive that is, if you will, a virtual encrypted disk? You would create this virtual encrypted disk, and then you would put all your security-sensitive things in this virtual disk area, and it would be totally encrypted, and you couldn't get into it. It would be a hidden volume, okay? You couldn't get into it unless you had some key that would allow you to get into that, a USB memory stick, a floppy disk, you know, password, something. Well, that's the idea behind TrueCrypt, and this software is open source. Gotta love that. Totally free. Gotta love that even more. And it works really well. You can go to TrueCrypt.org. You can read about it. Check out the screenshots. It'll show you how it works, how you create this virtual, you know, locked partition. And you can put different levels of encryption so that it's extremely, extremely secure. And you can just lock it right down. And I mean, you know, if you lose whatever it is you need to unlock this sucker, you're not going to get into it either, because it's that thoroughly protected and encrypted. So, you know, it's awesome. You ought to check it out. It's for those who are really security conscious. And actually, it's something you might really want to think about, particularly for financial documents and files. So take a look at it, TrueCrypt.org. I think it'll be really, really interesting for you to see that. Another thing I wanted to mention is I have talked in the past about protection in terms of adware, spyware, and I've recommended software like SpyBot Search and Destroy, Adware from LavaSoft, you know, Spyware Blaster. I still do. I still recommend those. They're very good. They have the virtue of being free, which is great. And they will find most common spyware and adware programs. However, there are those people who occasionally get something that Adware won't find, SpyBot Search and Destroy won't find, and Spyware Blaster won't block. What do you do then? You've got to have a more industrial strength spyware locator and destroyer software. And in a case like that, I have typically recommended spyware, you know, combating software from a company called Webroot, and it is very good. Don't get me wrong. However, there was a recent test that indicated that the best software, at least right now, for finding anti-spyware, for finding spyware and adware on your system, is a product called Pest Patrol. It beat the other spyware vendors by orders of magnitude. I mean, it was significantly better than all the rest of them. And I'm talking about WebRoot. I'm talking about a lot of very well-respected, very good programs for finding spyware. Pest Patrol just took them on and whooped them. So it's something you may want to think about. Now, yes, it does cost money. That's the problem. And it is a computer associates program. You know, I rarely recommend a computer associates program, and there's a long story behind that. I won't get into it. But they bought Pest Patrol. They didn't create it. Okay, I'll just say that and let it go at that. But PC Magazine has rated it number one. Micro has rated it number one. APC, just award after award after award. CNET, long list of awards here. But the thing about it is, it's only $29.99, but it is well worth it if you have spyware or adware on your system that is really, really deeply embedded in adware and Spybot Search and Destroy, and you know, the free software that's available won't remove it. You need to try Pest Patrol, because I'm telling you, this research they did, they infected systems with things that, man, you don't want to get on your system. Just takes it over, hijacks your browser, all kinds of things. They tested all kinds, both free and purchased, anti-spyware programs, and Pest Patrol came out way on top, way ahead. Okay, now, I didn't find everything, and I'm not saying it's perfect. It's not going to find everything. Nothing does. But it is the best right now. Now, it's a moving target, and they're always trying to improve it. But for right now, I would say go with Pest Patrol. You really won't go far wrong with it. And for the money, hey, it's really a pretty good deal. Okay? All righty. Well, you know, this has been an uneven podcast, because we really kind of got into some things. I really feel bad about that one tip. I thought that, you know, was just so simple, because I heard it and said, oh, that sounds good, and then I didn't try it. Oh, man. Dumb, dumb, dumb. Oh, well, that's okay. You know, the doctor can make mistakes, too. That's okay. One last thing I'll leave you with is a very nice letter that I got from my contact form on the website, and they ask a question. They have a follow-up question. They say, a few weeks ago, you showed us how to prevent some of the unnecessary app icons in our startup tray from launching, causing our systems to slow down. I have done so. However, every time I start up, I get a complaint from my system because it isn't set to the normal startup mode. I would like to do what will make my system happy, but still get rid of those icons that are waiting to be re-enabled. My question is, how do we remove them from the startup tray completely? Well, here's the thing. You remember when I mentioned that I said there were some things that were in the startup that you might not really want to remove because the system really needs them. So it may be that that's what it is, and the system is trying to tell you, wait, you really do need that, okay? So that might be the case. I'm not sure you don't tell me exactly what the application is, so if you want to mail me back and let me know exactly what application is still requesting to be there, it may be that it's just being, you know, persnickety, to use a good country expression. And, you know, it's just trying to say, please, please, don't make me go away. Please, please, I'll be good. You know, and it's trying to hang in there. And if that's the case, yeah, we can get rid of it. But it may be something you really need. So if you want to email me that, I'll look into it and I'll let you know exactly what it is. But the other thing that I'll reiterate is, if you've got something like that and it's kind of still requesting to hang in there, you may really want to look into something like WinterTweak. You remember I mentioned that? WinnerTweak. Now, that is a purchased product, and I always hesitate to mention a product that is a purchased product. However, Winter Tweak is nice in that it has wizards that allow you to know what it is you're removing and will, you know, tell you in the wizard what it is that it's removing and why that would help speed your system up. So it's a little safer, you know, unless you really, really, really know what it is before you try to remove it. So I guess I'd advise caution on something like that. Again, if you want to email me, it's Dr. Bill, D-R-B-I-L-L, at thecomputercurmudgeon.com. Email me what it is that's popping up and requesting this, and I'll look into it and let you know exactly what it is. But that's kind of what I'd say right now, okay? All right, well, we're going a few minutes over our typical podcast time, but I did want to get that answer in for that person that emailed the question. So, and I'll be responding back to them, you know, by email, as a matter of fact. I just got this today, so I wanted to mention it. I really appreciate your questions, and I want to get more questions from folks because it really helps me to know that there are people out there that I'm helping by doing the podcast. That just means a lot to me personally. And, you know how it is with a doctor. You got to work with your patients. You got to, you know. And I kid about that. But you know what? I do have two doctorates, believe it or not. One's in theology and one is in natural health. Neither one in computing. But I have over 26 years of computing experience professionally and have been working with computers for many, many, many years. My day job is computing. And I also do some teaching of the Bible, and then also, of course, natural health. Very involved in natural health community and particularly natural health rights, encouraging people to, in effect, stand up and fight for the right to, you know, use vitamins and use herbs and things of that nature. And I've got some things on my blog actually about that too. I have a little section on natural health issues. So if you want to check into that, I encourage you to do it. But that's where the doctor comes from. Doctor of naturopathy and doctorate, PhD in theology. And of course, people just call me Dr. Bill. And so I picked up on that, and it's Dr. Bill, the computer curmudgeon, because sometimes when I get to talking about how Microsoft's trying to take over the world and we need to stop them, then of course I end up sounding like a curmudgeon. But I'm not really that old, you know. I'm only going to be 50 this month, and a lot of people, 50? Man, you're a geezer. No, hang in there, hold on. No, you're only as old as you feel, and I don't really feel that old, although my gray hair is kind of catching up to me just a tad. But that's okay. I'm going over by several minutes. I'm sorry, but that's okay. I just wanted to share a few of these things from my heart to you. And by the way, those of you that might be interested, I mentioned that I have applied for the Tech Podcast Network. I haven't heard back from them yet. If I do become a member of that, I'll certainly let you know, and I'm looking forward to hearing about that. I would encourage you to listen to the Tech Podcast Network members that are already out there. I mentioned some of the podcasts that I listen to, like Todd Cochran's Geek News Central and the Digital Experience Podcast. A lot of different excellent podcasts that are out there. All have different kind of approach, different flavor to them. But I know that you will enjoy them because I certainly do, and I'm a geek, hey, so you would enjoy them. All right, well, I'll tell you what, until next week, we'll just ease on out of here. The doctor is out.